I got to learn about patience a few times this week. I went to Boy Scout store, Cub Scout store, to get derby cars. And wouldn't you know it, they just installed a new computer system. And they're still working out the kinks. And I was there for quite a while. Thank you for your patience. I wanted to say, I've been working on it this week. And then, with Jared's birthday being on Friday, he had three friends over for a sleepover. Patience was tested there. I think I'm doing okay. Hope you're doing okay, too. I realized on Friday that I never got around to putting the question on the Facebook about who you think is a good example of patience. So, sorry about that. Let's talk about some of the ones that I thought of. Some of them that I mentioned last week, and maybe one surprise. Are we expecting to... Okay, we're not expecting to have that. That's okay. I don't think anything was too crucial on the slides. And we'll get everything figured out eventually. Try cycling this one more time. You let me know if it works. Otherwise, I'm just going to go. I thought it was interesting that in class this morning, they're talking about Job. Maybe Job is the one who comes to your mind as an example of patience. How many of you have heard the idiom, somebody has the patience of Job? Heard that? How many of you would say that you had heard of that idiom by the time you were in ninth grade? Most of you, probably. Not me. I remember very clearly being in ninth grade English class. I don't remember what Mr. Kopp was teaching on exactly, but he was talking about idioms. And he says, like you might, for example, say someone has the patience of Job. And this might give you a little bit of insight into who I was as a high schooler, as a teenager. But I raised my hand and said, I don't know if I'd say patience is a trait of Job. Maybe you could say persistence. That might be a better one. If you're trying to think of a good example from Job, Mr. Kopp, you could go with persistence. And he just rolled with it. It didn't occur to me until a while later when I heard somebody else use the idiom, the patience of Job, that maybe Mr. Kopp wasn't making that up on the spot. And maybe he didn't need me correcting a long-standing idiom to try to let him know what he should be saying. And then even further this week, I thought, maybe even if he was making it up on the spot, I didn't really need to be correcting him at that time. And so this week, thinking back, I was able to appreciate some of the patience of Mr. Kopp. Because he continued with the lesson, and when he came back to the patience of Job, he stopped it. Wait, the persistence of Job looked at me, and he just went with it. Job probably is a good example of patience, maybe a better example of persistence. But we see through this book, Mike was encouraging everybody to read Job. If you start to read Job, you're going to find out that you need a little more patience because it is a lot longer than you might remember it being. Job goes on and on and on with these conversations, these discussions, these arguments between Job and his friends back and forth, and then finally Job with God, and then we get to the resolution at the end. It's longer than you might remember. But I still say persistence is probably a better trait for Job. And maybe that does come along with patience. We talked last week about in the verse in Galatians that it doesn't have to necessarily be translated as patience. It could be long-suffering. It can be an idea of endurance. And so perhaps persistence and patience can go together. And I'll allow you, if you're thinking of Job, I'll allow Mr. Kopp to think of Job as an example of patience. But I look to a different biblical example of patience. I think of Abraham when I think of straight patience. I'm sure Job had the long suffering and he endured a lot, but when I think of somebody who just had to wait and somebody going through that process of when is it going to happen and I know something is coming, how long is it going to take, I think of Abraham. Abraham, if you look back at where his story started, look at Genesis 12, God said, I'm going to give you all these blessings. What you need to do is go. I'll tell you where. And so Abraham goes. And he's trying to sort it out. And he just keeps moving around and keeps getting older and older as he's being reminded of these promises that you're going to have children and a great family and all of this. And we see Abraham struggling with patience at times. But we see him make it through. We see, as the author of Hebrews says in chapter 6, God made his promise to Abraham, since there was no one greater for him to swear by. He swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you and give you many descendants. And so, after waiting patiently, Abraham received what was promised. He may have only seen a very little bit, but even seeing a little bit of fulfillment of God's promises is a huge thing. And we can see through the story that continued with Abraham's family, all of the things that God did, and the story that continues through the Bible. So I think Job is a good example of persistent patience through hard times. And I think Abraham is a good example of the patience of not knowing when something's going to happen. He knew he was cared for, but he was anxious to know when things are finally going to pay off. But I want to talk about a third example of patience that you may not associate with patience. In fact, this is an example, a figure from the Bible that you might think of for many of the different fruits of the Spirit. You probably never would have thought of for patience. Still not there. We're going to talk this morning about the Good Samaritan, the parable of the Good Samaritan. I put the disclaimer that I acknowledge this person never actually existed. He was a fictional character, came up by Jesus. All right, let's go. Let's talk about the Good Samaritan. Have you ever thought of this parable being about patience? Well, let's recap it. Right? There's this man on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho, falls into the hands of robbers, left on the side of the road, left for dead, and who comes by? Right? Have a priest and a Levite, both pass by on the other side. And then we have a Samaritan. We've talked some about the scandal of having a Samaritan be your hero. The Samaritans were not the good examples. They were thought of as half-breeds by the good, faithful Jews, because their families intermingled when they were away in exile. And the Samaritan cares for the man, takes him to the inn, gives money to say, take care of him, says, I'll bring more if necessary. And Jesus asks, who was the neighbor to this man? Sound like patience yet? We'll get there. Now, you may have heard a few different reasons why the priest and the Levite didn't stop. You might have heard they were concerned about ritual purity, perhaps. Right? They maybe didn't know if this man was Gentile or Samaritan. Maybe didn't want to risk coming in contact with blood, perhaps. A lot of times we hear these explanations that have to do with ritual purity and not wanting to defile themselves in that way. And that's possible. I'm not here to make any statement about this is the lesson, but I think there's some other possibilities and other things we can maybe learn from this parable and from these motivations. When Jesus talked about the people in authority, especially the Jewish leaders, he didn't usually talk about priests and Levites. He would talk about Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes. These aren't usually the targets that he would go for. And I want you to think about another possibility. What if these two were simply too important and because of that, too busy? These guys are identified by the things that they do. Priests and Levites are often along with the priests. And what if these guys just were too busy to stop and help? Have you ever found yourself in that situation? You'd like to help, but I'm already running behind. You know, the train never comes when you're running ahead of time, right? You ever get stopped by a train when you're running ahead? I made that joke recently when I was heading up to the school, and then I thought, man, when am I running ahead? You know, when are we not busy? When are we not running behind? We were talking in the Tuesday class about this idea. We're talking about messy spirituality. And when we're looking at some ideas of how to have, you say, if we can't have what looks like typical spiritual growth, how can we have unspiritual growth? How can we grow in our messy spirituality? And one of the things that was suggested was try to slow down. Says, we live our life in the fast lane because it feels like there are no other types of lanes anymore. It feels like every lane is a fast lane. And we don't have an opportunity to be patient enough because we are so busy. I came across a study that was done at Princeton Theological Seminary about the Good Samaritan parable. And they were testing out this idea of busyness affecting how somebody would care for someone else. Because they looked at a lot of those suggestions of what might have been going on, and they were interested in this aspect. They had seen similar studies that look at the number of people around on how willing people are to help, but they thought there were some aspects they wanted to look at. So they were testing three variables on how people would help. The first thing they wanted to see is, will thinking helping thoughts, having helping on your brain, improve the response in a situation where somebody needs help? They wanted to see, will people in a hurry be less likely to help. And they wanted to see, will somebody's religious motivation affect, whether they're seeking personal gain or searching for meaning in life or different type of aspects. They say, will somebody having a Samaritan motivation be different than somebody having a Levite motivation, using the examples from the parable. So they set up this study where they had several of the seminary students that they would have at one building, and they would set up for them to go to another building across campus to go deliver some sort of lecture. Some of them were lecturing about lost the words, but I can't find them on the sheet here. Some were speaking about the Good Samaritan. I could buy myself some time with that. And others were speaking about seminary life. I can't find it there. They're speaking about getting into better schools and how to perform. One task was to prepare to talk about seminary jobs. There you go. As soon as I give up, I find it. There, I should confess, I have a couple pages of notes sitting on top of my printer at home. Rachel's really good when I get to the van asking, do you have all your printouts? Do you have your devices? These were handwritten pages on top of the printer. So I apologize. I was obviously too busy this morning to have all of my stuff in order. So anyway, some were speaking on Good Samaritan, some were speaking about seminary jobs. They were all given a religious perspectives inventory survey before they were sent off. And then some were told, you are running behind and you need to get over there right away. And some were told, you have a little bit of time, but you might as well go now. So three different variables. The survey tells a little bit about where they're coming from. They have who's speaking on different subjects, one about professional growth, one about the Good Samaritan, and some are in a hurry and some are not. And what they found in their data is the religious perspectives seem to make... I skipped a really important part of this experiment. On the way to giving their lecture, they came across a person in distress. A man laying on the ground, slumped in an alleyway. And he was instructed each time to groan and cough twice. And they would see how these people would respond, how they would react. They had a whole scale up from all the way from failed to even notice the person, all the way up to refused to leave the victim and insisted on taking them somewhere, and all the points in between. What they found was, overall, 40% of the people helped in some way. But when they broke down their variables, their religious perspectives that they got from those surveys seemed to make no difference. Where they're coming from didn't matter. Their thoughts on religion and what they're trying to get out of it didn't affect how much they helped. Whether they were speaking on professional advancement or on the Good Samaritan, you know, this exact scenario that they're going through, there was some difference, but it was very minor, about a 14% difference on whether they would help. But when you look at the variable of whether they were in a hurry, those who were not in a hurry, they were told, you've got time, so go ahead and go now, 63% helped. Those who were in a medium hurry, I'm not exactly sure what a medium hurry is, but I'm just reading their data. Medium hurry helped 45% of the time. Those who were in a high hurry, they told, you got to get there right now, helped 10% of the time. They said some of these people even stepped over the person to make sure they got there in time. We are working on patience, right? And we like to think that we are going to be the helpers when help is needed. And we like to think that we have the proper understanding of the teachings of Jesus to know the right things to do. But how often do all of those things go out the window when we see how short we are on time? When we see we haven't left ourselves enough space, enough time? I think that persistence and patience are both very important. But if we don't give ourselves the room to not be so hurried, if we don't give ourselves the room to be able to act, we are very unlikely to show that patience, to show that persistence. Some of the conclusions that the Princeton study came up with. They said, thinking about values does not imply that one will act on them. It's a sad truth. Just because we know the right thing to do doesn't mean we've given ourselves the room to do it. They said, maybe ethics become a luxury as the speed of our daily lives increases. I don't think we'd like to think of ethics as a luxury, but if we don't give ourselves the opportunity, perhaps it does. And then they looked at a few people who didn't help, but they could tell they did seem anxious when they got there and concerned, and they were talking about that conflict that seemed to be within somebody, and their conclusion there was, conflict rather than callousness can explain the failure to stop. It's not that we don't care. It's that we've created so many conflicts in our lives. We've created so many conflicts in our daily schedule, we don't have the patience to slow down, and we end up failing the people around us. We end up failing the gospel that we are seeking to live out. And so I think you can look at Job, you can look at Abraham. But I think as we look at this aspect of the need to have the overall patience in our lives to not be so busy, that maybe in those times when we are needing the persistence and the long suffering, that if we slow down and we are able to respond to those around us, maybe we'll be able to find some of that peace. There you go. We thought we were done with peace a couple weeks ago. all these things work together, right? Maybe we'll be able to find some of those answers. I mean, think about it. Job didn't begin to find any form of an answer until he learned some new questions. And maybe as we slow down and we start to listen to others, we start to help others, we start to learn about the questions that people have and the concerns that people have, maybe we can start to answer some of those questions that we have. Maybe we can start to learn some new ways of thinking about things by being available to others and being patient in the way that we are not busy. And maybe when we're feeling like Abraham and we have that anxious impatience and we're waiting, we're wondering when is something going to happen, maybe this kind of slowing down and not being so busy and learning to live with some margins in our life where we're not always going right up to the edge of the page, not always going right to the very edge with our time and with our budget, when always living to the edge. Maybe if we start to slow down, we can start to see other paths to what we're waiting for. I mean, think about it. Abraham wasn't able to see the fulfillment of those promises until he stopped trying to do it on his own. Right? Remember Abraham? He had plans. He said, "Tell him you're my sister." He said, "I'll sleep with your handmaid, you know, for you." He said, "Tell him you're my sister again. That worked so well last time." It wasn't until Abraham stopped trying to do it on his own that God showed him, "This is actually the way that I want you to go." And maybe if we stop for a moment and stop banging up against that wall where we think the answer's on the other side and we just don't know why we're not there yet, maybe we'll be able to see God showing us another way. So maybe the Good Samaritan parable is not entirely about patience. But I think there is a truth in there about the way as we are traveling on the road. As we're trying to get to where we're going, if we are able to slow down, if we are able to shake that temptation to be so busy, maybe we'll find the things we're looking for. Maybe God is trying to bring other people into our lives so to help us find the things we're looking for. And maybe that's another aspect of patience. Well, next week we're going to look at what Jesus had to say about patience. Maybe even greater, we're going to look at what Jesus showed us about patience. So next week, I hope you're here for Easter Sunday as we take a look at the ways that Jesus waited and acted patiently. What was the line that Mike said up here? I don't know. I'm done talking. I like that. I think I need to use that more. If there's anything you need this morning, we'll wait. We want to be here with you and pray with you and help you with whatever you need. If you need something this morning, please come forward and let us know as we stand and sing.
I am resolved no longer to linger, charmed.